Elizabeth is a mother and an advocate for her daughter, Sophie, who has a severe seizure disorder. Elizabeth wrote the book Hope for a Sea Change, A Search for Healing, and her work has appeared in several publications. However, I found her through her blog, which is called A Moon Born as If It Had Been a Shell. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm honored.
So my goal between now and today is to have some conversations that reveal how varied and experienced motherhood is and the multiple roles that a mom plays in her and your blog, which is a remarkable read. It covers exactly that so thoroughly. So can you kind of explain to listeners what your blog is about and what inspired you to write it?
Well, I started blogging back in 2008, I think, so many years ago, and blogging was really new, and I did it because I had kind of a partial manuscript of a memoir that I was working on, and an agent I sent it to said, you know, it's not ready yet, and what you should do in the meantime is start a blog because you need a platform and blah, 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 and I knew nothing about blogging and knew nothing about anything really. So I started a blog, and that's why it has a kind of a cumbersome title, which is a line from a William Butler Yeats, the great Irish poet. It's from a line from one of his poems, which is called Adam's Curse, a moon worn as if it had been a shell. So I like in a silly way, because I knew nothing about, you know, what comes up in search engines and all, as I put that as the title of my blog. And then I meant for it to be a place where that is now sort of the subtitle of the blog, where parenting, politics, disability, poetry, and now mermaids intersect. And each of those things are significant in my writing and on the blog. And so that's how it started. And now I'm probably close to 6,000 posts in.
Wow.
And I was trying to think that I might have to hire like a PA, which sounds so hilarious because I'm just a mom at home as a freelance writer. But I'm thinking I need to hire a personal assistant who will go through all those posts and help me organize them, because the platform that I use, that I still use, it just seems daunting for me to organize it. And I know I have a lot of material in there that I could pull from for this next book that I've been working on, which hopefully will be an actual print book. But that's my blog. So it's can be a very raunchy place, not sex raunchy, but lots of, it can have a, you know, I can go on rants, which I did actually today, but I also use it as a place to kind of reach a community that's grown along with the blog. And I don't know what I would do without it, because it's this beautiful community of parents and artists and disabled people, caregivers of the disabled, just single people, gay people from all walks of life, poets and all. And we all support one another. I've met many of them in person and they've become friends. And so I look on it, the blog is sort of has a life of its own, and it's totally enriched mine.
Oh, wow. So you've met people in person that you knew through your blog, like they introduced themselves to you?
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Quite a few. And in traveling, I've had people contact me and want to meet me. I've had people, when I got a fellowship with a group called Hedgebrook, which is this amazing fellowship that I got a couple of years ago, a writing residency on Whidbey Island. I met, I think, three different people who had been reading my blog for years, who knew that I was going to be on Whidbey. And a couple of them came and visited me and picked me up and drove me around. I spent the night with a woman who I met blogging, who had lost her daughter. Her daughter happened to be born on the same day as my daughter, whom I write about. So we had that bond, and then we read one another's blogs and books. And it's a very, it's an interesting kind of community, because it isn't, you know, people love to diss blogging, or they love to diss the internet, let's say. But particularly in the disability world, I've found that it's opened up and brought out of isolation a lot of people, and caregivers particularly. And I know that because my daughter is now 22. So when she was diagnosed in 1995, you know, I didn't even have a computer, much less an internet. And I was literally alone, you know, went home from the hospital alone with a baby who was very sick, and then lived for years with, you know, I never talked to anyone who'd had a baby who had disabilities. Or if I did, it was like a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend. And then eventually I did meet some people through a mother's group at one of the hospitals in Manhattan where I was living. But when I think about now how, you know, the kind of incredible networks that are out there for caregivers, it's very cheering. And I try to bring it up when people start coming down on, you know, how superficial it is, or how you're not really connecting or communicating. That's just not, absolutely not been true, at least in my community from my blog. But it takes work because you have to participate in it. And in the early days, I've made a point of reading a lot of blogs and commenting, particularly on people who would comment on mine. So you kind of build up a relationship. And sometimes the comments are really trivial. Sometimes you just say, you know, great post or whatever, but there's a connection that's made, and they, some of them become very rich over time. And that's certainly been my experience.
If you make a very powerful point. Blog posts and we talk about things because it does seem there are gaps. There are gaps in the stories that we tell in media, and the internet kind of be place where certain voices are. It actually makes me about Speechless. You mentioned in one of your older posts that you can identify with me this character on
Yeah.
the show Speechless.
Oh yeah, it's funny because I'm now writing a monthly column for Cerebral Palsy Foundation, which are the big advisors to Speechless. So I had the opportunity of meeting the heads of that nonprofit, which is based in New York, when I went to a private screening of Speechless. Because there were people in the disability world in LA that were invited to this small screening of Speechless when it came out. So I got to do that, and I got the, it's a gig. I mean, it's a freelance working gig where every month I have a topic, and there are four bloggers from all over the country who contribute, and mine, I just actually turned it in today. I think it'll go up next week, but I wrote one last week too. But the mini driver character in Speechless is so raucous and real and honest and raw. And I think I've always, I mean, I think that's part of my appeal to those kinds of people who appreciate that. Like, you're not going to come to my blog and read anything but, well, I. Truth. You're not going to read everything about my life. I've been very private about my former marriage, about relationships that I have. And as my children, my other two children have gotten older, they're now in their teens. I don't write as much about them for obvious reasons. So, yeah, but the mini driver comment, she's not nice all the time. I mean, she's a pain in your ass. And I like to say that, like, if I were nice all the time and approached every battle or every like exchange in advocating for my daughter, I would literally get nothing. It's not true that, you know, politeness and being kind and all those things, they actually don't always work. It's only been when I've, you know, been a real tiger mother, not one of those cliche tiger mothers who make their kids practice violin, but actually fight, like tooth and nail for basic things that they happen. And that woman, the Minnie Driver character, is like that. But she's also really vulnerable. And I think she shows that as well in the episodes that I've seen. And because really, I like to say, you know, what happened to me, what happened to the sweet person that I sort of identified as when I was younger, sort of flipped over and evolved over time. I think I was always like a fiery feminist and individualist and maybe a bit of an iconoclast, but those kind of characteristics sort of burst out when my daughter was born and when I learned just how messed up and the systems were for her care. Then I just became, I like to say, it's like, you know, I found my inner bitch, even though I hate that word. And I think when, and Minnie Driver's like that, or her character is like that. And yeah, so, and she's funny. And I think at my best, I'm funny. I mean, I have a very dark sense of humor that really sustains me. And so people who are looking for the everything is a blessing and God only gives you what you can handle and all that kind of stuff, they're not going to read my blog after a while because I don't, you know, that those are not my people, basically. My people are bitter and they're, you know, we don't brook any, we're not like into the gratitude stuff. Or if we are, and I actually had a column for a while on the website gratitude.org, which is a beautiful website. And I wrote from the position, a very different position of what gratitude is, but it's not a count your blessings kind of thing. And so, and I think that character on Speechless is like that too. Of course, it's very dramatized and some of it's sort of ridiculous. And I'm not skinny either, so I can't with her. When I met her at the screening, I was like, dang, you know, it could be me, but I have to be like, you know, super skinny and tall and wear high heels with my jeans and have a British accent. none of which are going to be happening anytime soon. So
what are things, you know, when we talk about ways in which you have to advocate for your daughter and different obstacles you come across, are there any specific with the system that you wish that more people were aware of?
Oh my goodness. I would, yes. I mean, everything. There's nothing that people are super aware of until somebody, you know, bangs it over their face. I mean, just the other day, I got into a little bit of a conflict because the Jimmy Kimmel thing came on, where he had a very emotional and quite beautiful display of his vulnerability of having a child with a heart defect last week. And, you know, the outpouring of coverage and news was kind of, well, it wasn't astounding because there's a part of me that wasn't annoyed with him personally, because obviously, you know, he's in the club now of what it's like to have a child who something's wrong with. But what annoyed me is, like, you know, there are many of us, many tens of thousands of us, if not hundreds of thousands, who've been either living their lives advocating like that or telling their stories, or actually actively working as paid advocates or as volunteer advocates or pouring their energy and talents into educating people. And there was something about it that I just thought, my God, why does it always take a celebrity to get people to wake up and fawn over, you know, this situation? I mean, it just, so, you know, of course, the number one thing I would say the fighting is healthcare and health insurance. And it was gruesome until Obamacare. And then it was progress. And now, you know, it's all square one again, if not worse. So there's that, the education system, which is also hurt by this new administration. But I think the number one thing is just you're basically fighting for your child's dignity as a human being who's worthy of a good life. And that can be as subtle as pity, people pitying, or people making movies about people in wheelchairs who'd rather kill themselves than be in a wheelchair. Yeah. There's very subtle disability bias, or it's called ableism too, if that's the PC term. So it's a constant thing, I guess. And it's, you walk this kind of, I've walked a fine line between wanting to convey the difficulty of parenting a child who's severely disabled, but also keeping her integrity. I mean, it's not as if I don't love her less because of it, because of the difficulties. In fact, you know, it's enriched my life vastly. She's not taught me that. I mean, I don't look at her disability as the reason for me being a more enlightened person.
Right.
But I've managed to find meaning from it. And I guess, yeah, the greatest thing that I struggle with trying to convey, and I do it best, I think, in my writing is really about identity and what makes us human. And that's what I most struggle with, I guess, as an artist, and trying to articulate that disability doesn't take away from your humanity. And it's kind of a long and a steep hill to climb, and it's exhausting, but it's exciting too, because I've learned so much about myself and my own biases and everything. And I hope that, you know, I've affected some. My other great passion right now is medical cannabis and marijuana legislation, because my daughter, after 19 years and 22 drugs and daily seizures uncontrolled her whole life, got vastly better with cannabis oil. So for the last few years, I've sort of shifted my advocacy from just epilepsy in general to specifically medical cannabis and educating people. I've written a lot about it on my blog. And again, with this administration, it's going to be, it's almost like starting over. So I'd say healthcare and pharmaceuticals and disability and medical marijuana are kind of my thing that I rant about, sometimes very unproductively, but I don't know. I know that alongside that, I don't, you know, not a week goes by literally that somebody doesn't contact me in some way with a very emotional, either a thanks or a thank you for writing what you write, and you've helped me, or an outright appeal. Can you help me find something for my child? And I honor every single one of those requests. And I feel like that's ultimately what makes me feel like my cursing and ranting and all of that is okay, because there are people out there who can't or won't do it. And I'm happy to do it for them if I have the ability or talent or whatever. So
you must be an extremely busy person.
I am. I've got two teenage boys, and in addition to my daughter, and one of them is going to college in the fall, which is totally freaking me out more than I thought. When you have kids after a disabled child, everything seems wonderfully simple, because it is, compared to having a child who has so many disabilities and problems. But oh my God, I'm like, already kind of sick to my stomach that I'm losing him to college and adulthood. I didn't think it was going to bother me as much, but it's, I'm like almost, I don't know. It's, it's really sucks, but everybody goes through that. No, they do. And I'm surprised, because the process itself is supposed to be so stressful, and it is, I guess, for most people, but again, I have kind of a different perspective about what we consider normal, and it's not stressful, but him leaving is really stressful. So
I hope he's not going too far.
no, he's not. He's going up to the Pacific Northwest. So
Oh,
I'm
okay.
about that. Yeah. So it's good. And then my other son is a wonderful companion, and they're both kind of extraordinary in how much they've helped me and been a team, especially in the last couple of years since I've been divorced. So they're both terrific human beings, too.
That's great. That sounds like you have an amazing family.
I do. I think I do. Yeah, I'm lucky. I'm lucky, and I don't know. It is exhausting though. I'm sort of exhausted a lot in my head, and this current politics are taking their toll. I don't know how much longer I can take it, but we'll see. It's predictable that I would be enraged, so I tell myself I'm a big meditator too. I have a bitter sense of humor and a meditator, and those are the two things that sustain me. That and my kiddos.
Yeah. So do you, as someone who has a lot of experience in terms of advocating and are
You kind of just dropped out a little bit. Yes.
Okay. Wondering if you had any tips or advice for people who are also upset about today's vote in terms of, getting our voices heard.
Well, I think there's some extraordinary ways you can participate in the process. Those automatic, the dialing things you can call, the dial a day. I mean, for people who have children with disabilities or just people who care about people with disabilities, the ARC, which is an incredible organization, they'll send out a newsletter and list, every congressman and their phone numbers and their faxes and their emails. Other than that sort of hard work of calling, which, there are periods where I think, why bother? Why bother? I think staying in it somehow a little bit every day and then bowing out when you are exhausted from it and letting other people pick up the slack. But, along with all of this other stuff, I'd say that I'm a really very strong feminist, and there's a part of me that thinks like there's no daddy that's going to help us anymore. So even if we revered and loved Obama or, the liberal congressmen or progressive congressmen and women, no one's going to save us but us. And part of that is waking up to it. And I don't know. I just think the disabled and people of color and LGBTQ and women, particularly Black women, those are the most vulnerable people in our society, and we're only as good as supporting them. So I'm a white, privileged, educated woman who, it's not just my duty. It's like, why wouldn't I help? And so I would just encourage people. I think even listening, when people talk about issues and not arguing, or I don't know what to tell people. I know that those connections that I make with other families who have disabled children all over the country, I mean, they have much the same struggles. And I'm lucky because I live in California and we don't have to argue with too many congressmen, although there are 13 of them that I'm going to be calling tomorrow. And
It's a lot.
yeah, so I think all of it's already out there. I mean, I became kind of a steering committee person for an indivisible group, which the indivisible guide is available online, and it was kind of written by congressional Democrats, and it sort of is modeled after the Republican the the Tea Party thing, and there are, I think, like 2 or 7, maybe even 5 or some thousand indivisible groups all over the country, but there are many in LA, and we have one, and I kind of do the healthcare committee, and basically we meet every month, and we have a big meeting of like 100 people from our local community, and we will work on local things, everything from extending support to our Muslim neighbors that are in Koreatown. I live in mid LA, and we've gone to the Islamic Center and expressed solidarity, to environmental things, to phone banking, if that's your thing, in my little group, of which no one seems to want to be a part of, which is healthcare. Now they will, I bet. There's a whole lot of stuff we can do. So I think getting involved in an indivisible group is probably advice I would give, because it's not just, you're not just, ours is called Active Empathy. You can find it on Facebook or whatever. And it's not just actually doing things, but you're meeting and you're empowered to make change. Again, from a feminist standpoint, it's that we are making change, and no one's going to do it for us. We've got to do it ourselves, and it's time to wake up and do it, and in whatever way you can, I guess that would be my advice. Plus it helps sustain you if you're defeated yourself, because there are other people who are working really hard. And there's a lot of people who just do that well. I mean, if you're the person that crawls in bed and pulls your covers over your head, that's okay. But it's good to connect with people who maybe have a little bit different way of responding, and you can be inspired by that.
That's great advice. Thank you so much for this. Before I let you go, people find your book and find your blog and follow you.
Well, my blog, if you just put my name, Elizabeth Aquino, in a, you know, the Google search bar, it generally pops up at the top. Otherwise, you can try to remember the Yeats line, a moon worn as if it had been a shell, which is ridiculous. I'm so sorry. But you can probably find it if you just put my name in it. And then the book is really just, it's really a short, it's almost an excerpt of a larger kind of work in progress that I'm working with an editor on now, but it's called Hope for a Sea Change. And it's available as an ebook for like $1.99 on Amazon. And it was published a couple of years ago by this really cool group called She Books that was, I don't think they're still operating, but they published work by women. So it covers maybe a few years of my daughter's life when I sort of began the journey, and has a sort of a neat ending, but it's not the whole story. It doesn't cover the marijuana, and it doesn't cover 3/4 of the story, but it's a teaser, I guess. And it sold quite a few copies, so that was kind of nice. But it is only available to download, so I think you can download it on iPad or Kindle or whatever, and it's like $1.99. And if everyone goes out and buys it, maybe it'll pop up in that weird little format of the Kindle. I don't know. For a time, it was like high up on the list in the science category, which cracked me up. But
interesting.
Yeah, but so there's that. And then I've on my blog itself, I have like a sidebar, and I'm very open to emailing, and I'm not particularly private except for what I said earlier. I don't, you know, write about like things like that are intensely private about relationships with unless they're kind of veiled, and because I can do some kind of prose poetry and stuff like that. But I'm always happy to talk to people, and my email is on my blog, and I'm on Facebook and all that jazz. So you can find me.
Thank you so much for this, Elizabeth. This has been great.
Thank you. Thank you. I look forward to listening to your other podcasts. It's cool.
Oh, great. Have a lovely evening.
Thank you.